Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about tax filing preparation on the show today, and none other than Mary Mellum back with us. Mary of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. She and her husband, David, they've been doing this for 30 years or more, and they serve individuals, they consult other tax professionals, and they teach tax seminars around the country. So as we visit with Mary, I hope you'll join in with your own questions about your taxes. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. ideas@WPR.org. Mary Mellum, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Thank you, Larry. It's nice to be here.
Let's talk about documentation first. What should we start gathering now to get started on tax prep? You know, what I have a file cabinet, and I just shove everything into that for each year in a file drawer. And so my stuff is mostly together.
And that's great. As things come, especially after the first of the year when documents start to come, those kinds of things should go in there. But before that, if you've done charitable contributions, it's important that you have the record of the charitable contributions, especially with the things that people send to Goodwill and the other type of organizations. They should have a list of those items. The taxpayer is responsible for coming up with the value of the item. And then when you have taken it to that organization, you get a form from them that basically says you brought it there. And all of that should be attached. We recommend pictures so that people are ready for tax season and ready for any potential questions that might come up later.
Are there changes? I think there are some changes from 2021 to 2022, at least for children with families.
Yes. The whole COVID experience was an unusual thing in the tax world. There was money floating around all over that had to be accounted for, whether it was taxable or not, on the tax return. And this year, I hate to use this terminology, but I think we're back to a more normal year, if you will,
okay,
as far as the rules go. So what I'm suggesting is that people hone down their expectations. If you want to get a better idea of where you might be, they could look back at their 2019 return and look at the child care credit, the child tax credit, EIC even for that matter. Those are more normal numbers of what we expect to see this year, unless Congress does something in the waning hours.
Somebody wonders if there's an age limit on claiming a child as a dependent.
No, in the broad sense, the answer to that is no. But there are a different set of rules. We have something called a qualifying child, which gives you the potential for earned income credit and some of the better benefits. That has an age limit. It's under the age of 19 or under the age of 24 and a full-time student. But you can have a category of what I call kids on the couch, where you have a child that is living with you well beyond those ages. And when you determine whether that child is a dependent or not, it depends on how much earned income that child makes. And if that earned income made by that child is under the old exemption amount that we had that dates back to 2017, there is that number, and it's roughly around $4,500. if they make under that amount and you support them and all of that, they could be your dependent for a lot longer. And that goes for disabled people as well.
Gotcha. Ron in Iron River has a question for you. Let's go there. Ron, thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I don't know how complex this is, but we had long-term care insurance, and I guess all these providers are trying to get, they want to get out of it because it's so expensive. So they offered us a buyout to relinquish our coverage. So we did that, and they're going to send us amount of money that's 20% less than what we put in. So we went ahead. I got a feeling it's not taxable because we're actually taking a loss. Is that true?
If long-term care is like the health, like life insurance, when you cash in a life insurance policy, you're able to look at your proceeds minus what you have invested in the policy. And so from that standpoint, I would say that it's probably not going to be taxable, but it'll be interesting to see if they send you a 1099-R. If the insurance company sees it differently, they could send you a 1099-R for that dollar amount. But again, like life insurance, it's how much you receive minus what you've spent on the policy. And if they're treating long-term care insurance the same way as life insurance, the answer would be no, it's not taxable.
Okay. Ron, there you go. Thank you so much. Let's take a call from Marty in Langlade. Hi, Marty.
Hi. I have a question about an IRA that I want to close out and take the money. And the investment firm says that I can elect to not have any withholding. If I do it that way and just deal with the taxes when I file the taxes, would that push me into like a penalty situation where you don't withhold enough, like when you're earning money, if you don't have a certain withholding, they try to penalize you?
What could happen, it depends on what your tax situation is. The general rule says that if you owe money to the government at the end of the year, when you file your taxes, you may have an underpayment penalty because you didn't give them the money during the year. If your taxes, if you have paid in more than last year's taxes, generally you don't have that penalty to pay. So it depends on what your particular tax situation is. You certainly can pay the taxes at the end with an IRA. They're able to ask you whether you want it or not. And if you take the tax consequences, the only things that would be, depending on your last year's situation, do you owe more than you paid in? You know, did you pay in enough to cover last year? If not, it could be subject to a penalty. And just as a reference, the interest rates at the bank have been going up, but the interest rate that the IRS is charging for underpayment penalties is also going up, and it will be at 7% starting, I believe, at the beginning of January. So it has gradually been going up from 5 to 6, and now it will be 7. So it is a larger penalty than what we've seen in the past.
Oh, there you go, Marty. So be careful. Do your figuring there. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org. Listener sent an email wondering if you can talk about deferred compensation accounts and withdrawal at age 72. RMDs, I think they're required minimum distributions.
Okay. When an individual turns 72, that is the RMD age, and you have to take out a certain amount out of your account. The amount, and this applies to IRAs or retirement plans, the deferred comp being the retirement plans. If you have both, you have to take out separately out of both types, IRAs versus retirement. So RMD applies to both. How to calculate it? It is the account balance at the end of the prior year, as in 22, or if you're taking out for 23, let's go with that. The balance in the account at the end of 22 divided by the factor that matches your age at the end of 23. That's how you decide how much must come out. If you're looking to get the 22 RMD in before the end of this year, you look at 21's ending balance divided by your age at, by the factor that goes with your age at the end of 22.
There you go. Thank you so much for that question. Rick in Monroe, it's your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I was wondering if you could tell me, are agencies obligated to get you documentation for your taxes by a certain date? I seem to recall that they're supposed to provide you with 1099s, et cetera, by the end of January. But I've sometimes received documentation late into February, and it delays when I can file my taxes.
That's a good question, Rick, and the answer is it depends. The reason I say that is if you have W-2s or 1099 NEC, non-employee compensation, they are due to employee or due to individuals by January 31st. 1099 INTs usually come out by that time. 1099 R's come out by that time. However, when you get into brokerage statements, they are generally due to people by February 15th. However, the brokerage companies often get extensions on that time limit. So, yes, they're supposed to be out. Most of the time, the government is not going to penalize those organizations if they get them out by February 28th, because that's when they're due to the government. Again, the brokers get extra time. So I'm not sure if that has helped an understanding. You're pretty much at the mercy of the people who are issuing them. If it is W-2s or non-employee compensation, the W-2s have to be out by January 31st. You cannot file a tax return without an actual W-2 unless the company is not, you know, fly-by-night company, didn't do it. Then you have to wait till the middle of February and fill out a special form with your calculation of what that W-2 should have, like from payroll statements and things like that.
Got it. Thanks for that question. Rick in Door County, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had occasion to sell some of my Packer tickets this year, and they go through Ticketmaster, and they're asking for a taxpayer identification number, I assume, to do some reporting. We sell at face value, so we're not making any money, and I suspect we're going to have to sell one or two at a loss. How is that handled for tax purposes?
Good question. And I'll tell you a little bit about why you're getting that request. The sale of Packer tickets at a profit is definitely a taxable event. I'm not sure people always reported it. The loss generally would not be a deductible loss because it's not an investment. It's a personal item. Losses on personal items are not deductible. But things have changed this year with what's called the 1099-K reporting. A 1099-K in the past has been a form that anytime you use certain credit cards or PayPal accounts or things, anytime that those transactions are made, the company that's taking the money accounts for that and sends out a 1099-K. It usually happens with restaurants and businesses. But this year in 2022, they have taken away the limit that used to be $20,000 or 250 transactions. Anyway, there was a certain number of transactions or dollar amount. That's gone. And so people will be getting 1099-Ks for that. And that's why they're asking for your ID number. Again, if you sold them at face value, all you need to do is make sure you report that on your tax return. X amount was what you got. This was my cost. No gain or loss. It will match up with the 1099-K that the government gets.
There you go, Rick. Thank you so much for calling. Taking a look at your taxes today with Mary Mellum, tax professional from Ashwaubenon and Tax Professionals. I'm Larry Mueller. Trina LaSousa is our engineer. Clara Neipert, our producer for the Ideas Network. Talking taxes on the show today, Larry Mueller here with my guest, Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. Questions? Well, open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas at WPR.org. Let's turn to Pat next. Pat, where are you calling from?
Hi, from Suamico.
Suamico, okay.
Yes, hi, Mary and Larry. I'm just calling about conversions to Roth IRAs, and I have not really been able to find real clear rules on exactly when you can do it or how you do it, but I was wondering about my RMD, if I could do some of that in a conversion. If you could just explain, Mary, the basic rules of doing a conversion, I'd be real grateful, or if you have info about where all the facts are written in the IRS rules, that would be helpful. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Pat.
You're welcome. As far as a conversion, you can convert the money that you have in that account at any time. You cannot convert your RMD. That has to be taken because that has to be taken for this year, and it's dependent on what was in the account at the end of last year. So the RMD that you need is a separate situation. But as far as a Roth conversion, the idea behind a Roth conversion is that you are moving money that you would normally have to take out and pay taxes on into an account that you are not required to take RMDs out of. But the catch is that when you convert the traditional to the Roth, you are paying taxes on the amount that you are converting now. When it goes into the Roth account, any earnings on it from that point on would qualify. You have to have it in there for at least 5 years before you could draw out any earnings to get it tax-free. The IRS does have publications at their website. I believe it's a publication 590, but if you go to irs.gov and in the search box type in Roth IRA, you will find the publication and the information that they have. To convert a Roth IRA, you must convert it by December 31st for it to be a 2022 conversion. But again, it will not change your 2022 RMD if you're required to take one out for 2022.
There you go, Pat. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Jerry in Caledonia, Minnesota next. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Larry. Question. If you're retired and you're 72 years old in 2023 and you have a variable annuity, does the RMD still apply?
All right. What you're talking about is this variable annuity is an IRA qualified product, correct? I mean, it is an IRA that is invested in a variable annuity. Is that what you're telling me?
I believe so, yes.
If it is in an IRA, then you have to take out the money. Whatever your RMD is for that year has to come out. And however they get the money out of that annuity, it has to come out. That's your obligation.
All right. There you go, Jerry. Thank you. Philip in Rhinelander, your turn. Hi, Philip.
Hi. I have a question about capital gains rate. My understanding, and I don't know exactly the amount right off the top of my head, but the first, let's say, $40,000 of long-term capital gains is taxed at a zero rate. But if a person has, let's say, $80,000 in earned income, and then they have another $40,000 in capital gains long-term, is that capital gains taxed at the rate of zero, or is it going to be taxed at the rate above the $80,000?
Okay. That is a good question. The capital gain rate is a 0% rate if, to the extent that your capital gain falls into the 12% tax rate. And the $40,000 that you mentioned is the rate roughly for a single taxpayer where that crossover is. For a married couple, that number is about $81,000. But if you have taxable income, the first thing that comes into play is the ordinary income. So if you have $80,000 of ordinary income and the capital gain is on top of that, and you're a single taxpayer, you're going to get no capital gain at the zero rate. You'll be paying 15% on that capital gain. Does that answer your question, or do we need to talk about it further?
I think that answers it. So basically, if you have capital gains long-term, it will be after all other income, basically.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. There is, on the back of the Schedule D form, there is a capital gain worksheet that basically walks through that. I'm sorry, it's a separate worksheet that's attached to the Schedule D. You'll find it in the instructions. But it will work through that, and it basically goes through how much ordinary income do you have? Do you have any room in the 12% bracket that isn't already being used as ordinary? If you have more room in that much of your capital gain would get the zero bracket. And then the rest would go to 15. And if your income as a single person is over $445,000, you'll be taxed at 20% on that portion that gets over that amount.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. Appreciate it. Bill in Whitewater, on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. Sure. Turning my tax form in for 2020 was delayed until November of 2021. My wife was very sick. Anyway, I turned it into my accountant sent it in the day they shut off electronic filing. I have not received the refund yet. It is
been
there for a year. What's that?
You're asking, is there something wrong that you haven't received it yet? It is very possible that it is still tied up. Right now, if you filed in November of 2021, depending on how the mail went, they may not have opened that piece of mail until 2022. Right now, the IRS is projecting that they are about 3.8 million returns that were received in 2022 that have not been processed yet. So it is very possible that that's where yours is hung up.
Hmm. Is there a way to check, Mary?
Oh, well, if you have a refund coming, there is a way to, you can go to the IRS website, irs.gov, and check where's my refund. But it seems like that's one of the processes at the IRS that is not very up to date.
Ah.
And I just heard, in this is the fact that it's a paper return has everything way behind. I have some clients that we filed electronically for, and they're just getting their refunds for 2021 returns now in November. So everything is backed up.
And unlike when you have to pay interest if you're a little late.
The IRS does pay you interest.
Oh, they do.
Definitely. Which is another thing that people should think about. Because the refunds have been delayed with everything, when you do get your refund payment or check, there is a portion of it that is on, that is probably interest. And on the document somewhere, they should tell you that, or if you know the difference between what you ask for and what you received, that belongs on your 2022 tax return as interest paid to you.
Okay, got it. Bill, thank you for that question. Appreciate it very much. By the way, you can join in too. Open lines get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to Carol in Wisconsin Dells. Carol, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, my question is, what if on your tax form that you said you wanted to carry over the refund to another year, but the IRS messed up and sent it back to you instead? So
if they,
your next year's filing was not correct because of that.
Well, the filing, the effect of it is you don't have as much paid in as you said you did on the return. That means that the IRS is going to send you a bill for that or lessen your refund, and they may charge you interest. Do you have a lot of recourse if the IRS made the mistake? Probably not. You can go back and ask them for a refund, you know, of interest and things like that. But right now, getting a hold of the IRS and dealing with them is probably not worth the time to do that.
Yeah. Just sort of as an aside, Mary, my understanding was they were hiring or were going to hire a lot more people in the IRS. Is that a process in effect or not?
The infrastructure bill, I believe it. Well, there is the infrastructure bill and then there is the inflation reduction bill. I'm not sure which one of the bills contained it, but they did allocate money to the IRS. Part of that money was earmarked for new employees. The media has told us that it's 87,000 new IRS employees. And, you know, there is a lot of talk about what these employees are supposed to be doing. And there is a lot of controversy of whether we should be giving the IRS this money or not. Bottom line is, in today's market, even if you put out a call for 87,000 employees, those employees, chances are you're not going to be able to fill it. And IRS has been given this money theoretically over 10 years. So we're not looking at 87,000 all at once. Also, if they are, even if they were to hire one-tenth of that, that would be roughly 9,000 people. it takes time to train those people. And when you train those people, you're taking people off of the jobs they're doing now to train those people. So just because the IRS is supposed to be hiring new people doesn't mean you're going to see the feel of it right away.
Got it. Makes sense. Steve in Green Bay, we'll go to you next. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, Larry, I'm 70 last May, and I have a traditional IRA account, and I take money out every year, but I want to back off a little bit because, you know, stocks are down. Am I going to have to take a mandatory amount out?
If you are age 70, the answer, no. Did you turn age 70 in the last, since 2020?
I turned 70 in May of 2022.
Okay, then you are not required to take money out of your IRA until you turn 72. So in 24, you would be required to take a certain amount, which is, again, dependent on how much you have in that account. So you certainly right now can back off, and there's no problem. You don't even have to take any out if you don't want right now.
There you go, Steve.
Is there a formula how much you have to take out at 72?
Yes. It is the account balance at the end of the prior year divided by the factor that goes along with your age. And at age 72, I believe the factor is 27.4 as it is right now. Now, the only thing that I might say is, are you taking out money? Did you retire early before age 66 maybe, or before age 59 and a half, and start taking money out of your IRA then?
Yes, I retired at 62 and started taking money out then.
Okay, then that's not a problem. For those people that started like at 55 and decided to take it out, there's something called substantially equal periodic payments. And if you had started that, that might have been a reason why you were taking out money earlier when you didn't, theoretically, you wouldn't have had to. But in your case, you don't have to worry about RMDs until you turn 72. So take out as you wish, and there won't be a penalty for it.
Steve, thank you for calling. Joe and Toma, on to you now. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Larry. Thank you very much for the call. Interested in, I have an I bond. It matured in 2020, but I did nothing with it. Last year, December, we ran into hospital difficulties and decided to use cash out. So I cashed out the bond on the 27th of December, filed taxes in March of this year, sent them in. I used the $15,000, which is the interest on it. I filed that as ordinary income, did my taxes, sent it in, and I haven't heard if I have a penalty or not on it. And that's what I'm wondering. Do I have a penalty or why? I haven't gotten an answer yet. Thank you.
Well, the reason of not getting an answer is the typical reason of not getting an answer. As far as the I-bond is concerned, there is a certain length of time that you are supposed to keep the I-bond, and my understanding is if you cash it in before that, there is a penalty of 3 months' worth of interest. I don't know if I would suspect that they deducted that amount from the interest that they paid you when you cashed it in. So if you have any records with that I-bond, that is probably what's happened with it. And I would go back and just kind of look at the interest that you received and see how much it maybe would have been had you been able to cash it out, you know, or hold on to it. I don't think it's an IRS issue. If you hadn't reported it on the tax return, then that would be an IRS issue.
Oh. There you go, Joe. Thank you. Fred in DeForest, your turn. Hi, Fred.
Yeah, I bought some farmland here a couple of years ago, and I've been paying taxes on it, but I not rented it out, and I've got any money back until this year. And I'm wondering if I can claim my previous taxes as far as on expenses, or can I only claim this year's taxes, and what this is going to do to my taxes. I've never been in this situation before.
Okay. Let me understand again what you're saying you did. Prior to this year, you bought some farmland, and the farmland correct. Just sat there, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you paid taxes on that farmland each year. Those
yes.
taxes would have been deductible as itemized deductions, or had you made an election at that point in time, you could have added it to the basis of your farmland. But right now, there's nothing you can do about it. The only thing that is deductible against the rental income is the taxes that you actually pay in this year.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Fred. Appreciate it. And on to Jerry in Oshkosh. Hi, Jerry.
How you doing? Thank you. Say, I have a question. I have a Roth IRA that I've had for 14 years. I'm 63, or I was born in 63, so I'm 59 and like 7-8 months. What are my penalties if I just want to take all my money out all at once?
As far as your Roth IRA, as long as it's been there and you're over 59 and a half, it's been in there 5 years, and you're over 59 and a half, you're not going to have any penalties at all. So don't take it out before you reach 59 and a half, and you can withdraw all of it and not have to pay any taxes.
Jerry, there you go. Appreciate your call. Mary Mellum, our guest today, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She and her husband own Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Looking at your taxes and tax preparation with our guest, Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She's been in the tax business a long, long time with her husband, David. They operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. Questions? Join in at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Myron and Baldwin, we'll go to you now. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Got a question about taxing Social Security. My wife and I on our combined Social Security and sideline work kicks us up into the over the $44,000 mark, and we pay quite a bit more taxes on the Social Security. Would we be better off filing? Can we file separately, which would make mine or make one of us under $44,000?
No, there are special rules if you file separately that I believe makes your Social Security taxable at a higher level. So, no, it's not going to benefit you to do that.
Yeah, it's when is it beneficial, let's say a husband and wife, and let's say the wife makes twice as much as the husband. In a situation like that, is it better to file separately?
Well, first, there is one problem. In Wisconsin, we're a community property state, which means that what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine too. No, that's jokingly, whatever comes into the household is considered earned evenly by both members. So theoretically, whatever you earn would be split evenly between two tax returns. So you're not benefiting by going up and down in Wisconsin. Now, there are exceptions to that. People that have premarital agreements, that could be a situation where it could be divided differently, but that's by choice. I mean, that's by choice, or a marital agreement that they do that, but it's a planning thing. So generally, no, it doesn't. And when it comes to married separate, there are certain tax benefits that are lost or things that are put in place that cause numbers to be taxable at an earlier point. And that's what Social Security has done, that they don't want to encourage people to play the game of not taxing one or the other by their filing status.
And just kind of relating to this, Tim in Waukesha started to receive Social Security, SSDI, and federal taxes are not being withheld from Tim's monthly checks. Where does he go or who does he contact to have federal taxes withheld?
There is, he can contact the Social Security system and ask them to withhold taxes. I believe the form is a W-4V, and that would say how much do you want to have withheld. And there are some choices that you have, and I'm just, there are choices that you can have 7, 10, 12, or 22% withhold, federal withholding from your Social Security benefits by filing this W-4V.
Got it.
And Victor.
Let's go to Ken in Eau Claire. Hi, Ken.
Hi, good morning. We still there?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I've kind of got a double barrel one here. I'll do it as quick as I can. The first one is we've started a social justice group, we call it, and we make 0% interest loans, no finance charge, for people who are really on the margins, trying to keep them away from so-called payday lenders, car repo people, and that kind of thing. It's all volunteer group. No one gets any wages of any kind. We started it 12 years ago, very, very small scale, but it's been growing and growing. And when we first started, IRS people told me that don't be concerned if there's never any income over $5,000. Well, we don't really have income as far as I see it. We get donations from people, and we lend that money out. People pay us back, and we lend that money out. So do you think I should be getting concerned about the fact that this is getting much larger than we thought, and it's more successful than we thought it was going to be? But we were not okay, so that's the situation anyhow.
First of all, have you ever filed for nonprofit status?
No, we have not, but we are incorporated. That's one thing I did do. So we are a corporation, and we do the annual report, which is just our renewal kind of thing. And that's basically all that I've done.
Okay.
The nonprofit is what we're thinking. You mean a 501c3? Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, we're under somebody else's umbrella. There's another group that we're under. So if somebody wants a charitable right deduction, this group will provide the form necessary for them. So we're just under them is what they say.
Okay, so then you are a nonprofit, but you are a nonprofit like a feeder organization, we call. So you're a part of that other organization as a separate entity underneath it.
Right, right.
If that's the case, then it is, there is an exemption for nonprofits. Now, I'm assuming that they list you in that other organization as a nonprofit under them?
I would assume so, too, because, yes, they've, you know, if they've received some donations from people, it has to go directly to them. It can't come to us because they're the 501c3, and technically we are just under them.
Okay. Then they're the ones that should be taking care of any reporting requirements, unless you want to be your own nonprofit there isn't anything you technically have to file. And when you say you keep up your registration, I assume that's with the state of Wisconsin.
Yes, it is. Yes, correct. Correct, yeah.
So under the federal doesn't really see you. They see the other organization.
Gotcha. Okay, well, that's good to know. Okay, very good. could I ask one more? It's a really different question, and I'll make it real quick. And it's related to our sons who are, they're old enough to know better, but for 3 years, 2017 through 2019, 2020, they were supposed to get refunds, but they never filed. And then what happened was they finally admitted to me that they never filed. And I'm like, what? You can get a refund. So in the meantime, the house they were living in was underwater, and it actually got taken back by the bank, by Wells Fargo. And in the meantime, they were paying $500 a year back on a first-time home buyer's loan. 2017, the house was taken away, but the government did not know about that until 2020. So right now, and with everything building up with the with COVID and all the back paper log, what's happened is, well, we finally filed the 2018 and 2019, but they kept the $500 out for both of those years because they had not realized that the house had been taken back by Wells Fargo in 2017. So we got the $500 back for 2017 and the $500 back for 2020. But the other 2 years, I don't know, can I ever get that $1,000 back for them or not? That's what I'm, and I can't seem to contact anybody to even know where to start to. I've tried calling there. You can't get in, and maybe the money's just gone. But I don't know if you understood all that. But if not, that's okay, too.
I understand. My concern is about the house being underwater. There is a reporting requirement. You know, if they had any cancellation of debt that was due to the house being underwater, that's a separate tax issue that you should be taking a look at. And as far as normally, there's a 3-year statute of limitations. So the 18 return, and I don't know, did you ever file those returns, 18 and 19?
I did, and they got money back for each of those years minus $500 out of their return because they wanted, they still didn't know at the time.
Then you would have to file an amended return for that year. The 18 was due in 19, so 19 to 20, 20 to 21, 20. The 18 is on the bubble that if you get it in quickly, maybe they would consider it, but you have a 3-year statute of limitations on it. So I would, you know, show them the proof that they did not have the house anymore, that it was taken back and whatever, to get that money back. That would be an amended 1040X would be the only way to do it. And I certainly would try for 18. You may not have any, because of the timing, you may not get anywhere, but you won't if you don't try.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, there you go, Ken. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Penny wonders in an email when it's worthwhile to itemize charitable donations or other expenses.
Good question, Penny. First of all, itemized deductions, depending on whether you're single or married, for the married taxpayer, it is about $25,000, and I'm just doing round numbers for the married taxpayer. Half of that is what the single taxpayer's standard deduction is. To be able to itemize, you have to get over your standard deduction. And so that $12,000 figure for a single person, $25,000, and I believe it's $12,008 this year, and double that for the married couple. So you cannot have any more than $10,000 from withholding and property taxes and that kind of thing. So if you did maximize that out, for a single person, that would mean about $3,000 more of itemized deductions before you would benefit from anything. Married couple, again, you'd have to see how much of the amount is allocated differently. But look at your standard deduction, look at your withholding tax and your property taxes, and anything subtracted, that number not to exceed $10,000 subtracted from your standard deduction will tell you how much additional you have to have. And then one last thing, even if you can't itemize for federal, Wisconsin has an itemized deduction credit, and depending on where your income is, you could be taking charitable deductions as a credit against your Wisconsin tax as well. So a lot of it depends on where your income is for that.
The good question, though. And Mary Mellum, our tax professional from Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals in Green Bay, will be with us right up until 12:30 today. We are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Mary, and you could join in right now if you want. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org so you can get in line. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your taxes on the show today with Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. She does a great job on this every time she's on. And we're going to go right to the phones and take a call from Elizabeth and Wanakee next. Elizabeth, hello. Thank you for calling. And what's on your mind?
Year we decided to use an accountant was 2020. That was also the first year that my husband started taking Social Security because he turned 70, and it was a partial year. And when my husband gave the accountant, I mean, he gave him a beautiful spreadsheet of everything, but he forgot to list the Social Security income for part of that year. And so I guess, you know, I'm going to ask if I think that accountant should have caught that, because my husband's birth date was there and he also knows, you know, that we are older couple. But so I'd like your thoughts on that. But at any rate, my husband discovered the error after just a couple of months, and we filed an amended return and found that we had underpaid by $7,000, and they've slapped an $1,800 fine on it. We have written a letter to appeal the fine. I think it's horribly unfair for a couple of months, but so I'm wondering if there's anything else that we can do with the IRS other than wait. I mean, it's been over a year and a half that we've been dealing with it. And whether you think the accountant has any culpability.
Okay. First of all, the timing issue, everything is behind at the IRS. They will get to you and get a response to you if they have gotten the letter or when they open the letter. So the $1,800 penalty seems high. So it makes me wonder what else is involved. And without looking at a tax return, I don't know that. As far as when you report your income, if you have received Social Security, there is a 1099 SA that comes, and it should be given to the tax professional that you have. Should there have been questions asked? Yes, probably. Again, I don't know how the delivery of the tax return, you know, whether you went to meet with them, whether you filled out a questionnaire, what it was. The fact is, it wasn't on there. Whose mistake it was, I don't know. We all make mistakes. And if you think you're going to go to a tax professional that will never make a mistake, then you're dealing with the wrong thing, because as hard as all of us try, people make mistakes because they're human. I would hope that you went back to the person and had it dealt with from that side of it, you know, and went back for their help. We can't fix anything unless we know something's wrong with it. And just because you might get a letter about it, we as tax professionals don't get the same information you do from the IRS unless we have a power of attorney. And that's so, it's hard to comment without knowing everything in this situation. $1,800 seems like a lot on $700. If it's $7,000 of tax due, that money must have been a lot of money or something. So, again, without knowing all the circumstances, I don't know. But if you went back to your tax professional and dealt with them, you know, that's the best suggestion that I can have for you to do it. I'm not in the place to call them out or say they should have done this or that, because I don't know of how they did it. So, at 1099 SA is what you need. That has the Social Security information on it. And as tax professionals, we need to see that.
Elizabeth, thank you for calling. We kind of related in a way, I guess. Tom had emailed us. He got a letter from the IRS that his 2018 tax was not filed, even though he was told by the accounting agency that they had filed it. He paid them for doing the taxes, but they did not complete the taxes or send them to the IRS. He took the letter to the agency. They finally completed the forms for both state and federal, but would not send them to the state or federal government or e-file them. They sent him only one copy of each and demanded he send them in. They refused to send him a copy of both state and federal government. What can Ken do about this situation? Is there a complaint form he can fill out or get the situation resolved?
Well, I don't know where Ken went or whatever. There seems like a lot of situation here. First of all, if he got a letter from IRS saying that IRS didn't have the tax return for that year, some of it has to do with things that are going on at the IRS. So the first thing that I would have done is go back to the professional and say, prove to me that this was filed. And if it were electronically filed, there is a form that they should be able to download from their software that says IRS accepted it on certain date. If they don't have that, then did they give them copies and expect it to be a mailed return? I don't know about that. I mean, I'm not sure. Again, not knowing the conditions, the situation, what kind of people they were hiring to do it, I don't know. But here's just a little information just to show you how the IRS is and how things can happen. We have a client that we have received a letter from the IRS about a 2018 return. We have confirmation that it was electronically filed in 2019. IRS claims they never got it. We have responded it to him. This is the third time we have responded to them, and we are now waiting for their response. So, again, just because you get a letter from the IRS doesn't mean that the tax professional did it wrong. If the tax professional, and if they are a professional and did not do what they were supposed to, yes, there is a form that I believe this form is a 14-157 form that you can file with the IRS that complains about a tax professional. You can go onto the IRS website, look up that form. But again, before you're complaining about something they did, make sure that they did not do what you engaged them to do, and that's very clear. Again, just because people are not getting their refunds or not getting things doesn't mean that it's not on the IRS's end.
Yeah.
Because things have been a mess there just because of COVID, because of the shutdown, because of not having enough people, all of those things go together to make it a tough situation.
Let's take another call. Larry in Kingston, it's your turn. Hi, Larry.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a son that is a retired Army Special Forces, who's a weapons specialist, and he's got PTSD and multiple brain injuries, and he's bipolar now. So he's been in and out of jails and hospitals, and he hasn't filed his taxes, I don't think, since 2018 or maybe even further back. Is there anything he can do to settle his situation? Because he always gotten a refund.
Yeah.
I would recommend that he take his paperwork and go to see a tax professional about it. Some of those years, it depends on how his government retirement is, how much taxability there is to it, that kind of thing. And so, again, without knowing those things, if there are back returns that were not filed, he may have refunds, especially in the COVID years, that he might have money coming that you need. He needs to go to see someone to straighten this out.
That's good, good advice. Larry, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Marlene in Wales, we go to you now. Hi, Marlene.
Hi. Love your show.
Thank you.
I have a question about, excuse me, like paying your property taxes in order, like in, how do I say this? You have a range of time to pay your property taxes. So if you pay it in January 1 year, and then for that next year, you pay it in December, you'll have two sets of property taxes that you can then use as itemized deductions for that tax year. Then, of course, the year after and before, you won't have any, but you'll get the standard deduction. It doesn't amount to a whole lot, but I've done that, and it allows me to itemize for the 1 year, like every other year. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. Marlene, that was a really good strategy that we used to use before 2018. And I say before 2018 because in 2018, we have the expanded standard deduction that makes it harder for people to itemize. And we also have the tax limitation of the $10,000. So the strategy is great, and it would work fine if you are in an itemized situation and your total taxes do not exceed $10,000 in any year. But keep in mind, there is one drawback to bunching your property taxes. On the state of Wisconsin, you have a property tax credit. And the property tax credit is a maximum of $250 and $300, I believe. But it is a maximum of, to get that maximum, it's about $2,600 of taxes. If you pay more taxes than that, you don't get any bigger credit. But if you don't have that much the next year, because you've only paid a part or none at all, you lose out on the credit. So it's kind of a balancing act to make sure that what you get on the federal outweighs what you lose on the state.
That makes sense. Marlene, good luck. Thank you. Laura in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I have a question. So my son had some money through a trust that he received. He invested it into, like, Edward Jones, right, into the stock market. And it's been a couple years now. He's also working, so he files taxes for his income. Does he have to do anything with that pot of money that he has set aside in the stock market? He's not pulling anything out.
Okay. So first of all, it depends on how that money is invested. And what I mean by that is you mentioned a trust. Is the account that he had inside the trust, is the brokerage account inside the trust? If it's inside the trust, then it's being reported through the trust return. And if he takes any distributions, he's going to get a K-1 that goes on his income tax return. If it is not inside the trust and it is money that comes through that is his money, even if he has not cashed any of it in, he is still responsible for the income tax on it. So it all depends on how, what he's getting and how this money is there. How old is your son?
23.
Okay. So is he a full-time student?
He graduated from college.
Okay.
He'll be going to med school here next fall.
Okay. So the reason I was asking his age is because if he has investment income and he is under the age of 24 and a full-time student, you might have a kiddie tax issue beside just his tax return issue. That means that he'd have to pay taxes on some of the income at your tax rate. So that doesn't seem to be the case with your son here. But I would encourage you to... for him to take a look at that brokerage account and find out, is it in his name and Social Security number? If so, it belongs on his tax return. If it is still in the trust name, then someone should be doing a trust return.
There you go. Laura, thank you. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Scott in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Yes, hi. I've got two kind of related questions due to the fact that I'm semi-retired, but my wife still makes a pretty good amount of money, and we've got a good amount of money saved up in various investments. And for the last many years, we've always had to pay taxes because the main factor is all of our investments, we're not putting any estimated taxes in, so we always have to pay thousands of dollars every year. My first question is, our investment guy, our financial guy, is always after us to do a Roth IRA conversion. And we've been doing that, the $6,000 or whatever it is you can do every year. But that's another taxable event. So here my wife's making a lot of money, got all these investments, and then we're even putting more income on top of the pile. Is that still a good idea, given that? And the second one I'll throw out real quick, you can answer them both, is can I still put in a quarterly payment to the IRS to maybe hopefully avoid the small penalty we always end up with because of this investment income that's not being taxed?
Definitely you can. I'll answer the last one first. Definitely you can make a quarterly payment. You can send the IRS money anytime and they will be happy to accept it. The fourth quarter payment for covering the fourth quarter is technically not due until January 15th of 2023. So you have more than enough time to do it, and I would encourage you to do that, to send it in to offset some of the penalty. As far as the Roth conversion, again, I don't know your tax situation. I know what you've told me. I understand the theory of converting the Roth, and again, I hope that your financial person is looking at the big picture of how much RMD that you have to take out and what the Roth conversion is going to do with it. But if you are both working, I mean, if your wife is working and you are making the Roth conversion, I would hope that they're watching the tax brackets so that you're not converting so much that it flips you into a higher tax bracket on that conversion. So conversion is not a bad idea under certain circumstances. But again, there's a lot of juggling to watch your tax situation to see if the conversion makes sense. And I think it's something that should be looked at every year with that kind of income. Do you have a tax professional as well as a financial planner?
Well, we've been using the one guy had retired or quit, and I've been using a different guy the last year, and it was all done by email and stuff. I never actually met anybody, but I do have somebody doing our taxes, yes.
Well, I would encourage you to even if you're doing it by mail, to get a hold of that person and talk with them and ask for different scenarios. What would happen if I took out, if I converted less, more? And sometimes it's good to have your financial planner and your tax person communicate so that they're both on the same page.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. Scott, good luck. Thank you. Diane in Madison, since the beginning of the pandemic, she's donated a lot of food and clothing to places like food pantries or community organizations. She gives to places registered as nonprofits. She doesn't get receipts, though. She'll leave food at an open pantry or give a bag of clothes to a volunteer who's collecting. Can she deduct any of that?
The food that she has, as long as she has the receipt showing that she's purchased the food, that's a good, having that receipt and marking the receipt that that's what it went for, that would be her record for the food. As far as the clothing, again, if she is giving it to an organization like Goodwill, like St. Vincent de Paul or Bethesda or any of those other organizations, they are equipped to hand out at least a piece of paper that basically says you've been there. And it's up to you to add what did you actually give and what's it worth. But that piece of paper that they have that says I gave this on this date is something that you need in order to deduct those, the clothing. And, of course, the food, just your grocery receipt showing what you donated.
Yeah.
Spice as receipts.
Well, on that note, Mary, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us. I hope you can do this again with us.
I look forward to it, Larry.
Thank you, Mary. Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. She and her husband, David, have been doing it a long time, and she really knows what she's talking about. Great to have her with us. And great to have you listening in. Tomorrow, sports show, we'll talk about a sport that combines cross-country skiing and rifle shooting, biathlon. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.